discussion in the hotel at Benares Tuesday morning.
Just a point that has come up in discussions over the last two or three days about studying Dhamma and paying attention to, for example, the audio on the bus rather than the passing visual spectacle as being an idea of a better condition for developing awareness. In other words, that one thing is better to do than another. Could you make a comment?
Are you selecting?
Of course.
yes, selecting, yeah.
So it's
but not selecting an object as such.
Is there no even the very slight attachment to some expectation?
Certainly. Thinking one situation is better than
I mean,
the other.
I actually said to Jonathan, that I'd been looking out the window and the tape came on and I thought I'd better stop looking out the window because if I'm looking out the window, I start to think about what I'm seeing as opposed to listening to the tape. But there's certainly expectation that I'll grab more information or more of Dharma teaching if I stop looking out the window. And I agree that with what you say. So the question, the quandary is, how do you proceed? Because when you choose, there is expectation, right? I want to listen to Ajahn Sachin, I don't want to look out the window.
It depends on
whether Sati arises or not. No choice at all. So Panya can see whether it's attachment or it's awareness, that's all. Because the whole day or the whole morning passed by without understanding of a reality when Sati is not aware, when Sati does not arise, no awareness at all. But whenever there is a moment of awareness of a characteristic, Panya can see that that is just the moment that Panya can grow and understand. The rest, all in the morning or all day, pass without any understanding. But never mind, because it's gone completely. Otherwise, the clinging and the idea of self sneaks in instantly, again and again. That's why it depends on Panya, only Panya, which begins to really understand reality as whether there is attachment to it or not. This is why the attachment is the second truth, and the function is to eliminate lopa. It's not all of lopa, but lopa with wrong understanding of self.
What about, you reached a point, at least I did on the bus, I reached a point where it was like over sensations coming in, from to the ears, to the eyes. And I closed my eyes and it was like over sensations to the ears. I mean, there was the horns, there was the Dhamma tape, and then there was talking throughout the bus. It was like, I reached a point where it's like I was being over, of course I was feeling ill, mm-hmm. but over sensations coming in, too many sensations to the point where I guess maybe, I don't know, it was the body or the mind. This is what I want to ask about. In as a means of protection, just started to blot it out because it was just like over.
They're all sense. Dhamma. But they are
all
Dhamma,
yes,
but one is always forgetful that is Dhamma. That's why there is thinking a lot about everything. But whenever there is awareness, it is aware of an object only. So you don't mind at all what's going on so fast in between, mm-hmm. because at that moment Panya sees that it's not like being aware and beginning to develop the understanding of reality as just that particular one, as a reality,
well,
when awareness arises.
I think in my case it wasn't that, there wasn't an awareness of a, mm-hmm. it was just an awareness,
right.
It was just a feeling of too much sensory mm-hmm. stuff coming mm-hmm. in.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not attachment.
Huh?
Definitely not attachment in your case.
Well, yeah. Well, no, there was an attachment because there was definitely dosa by having all this, what I thought was too much sensory stuff coming into my eyes and ears. And I think there was an attachment in the sense of dosa. It was like, why? But is that a natural process? Is there, can there ever be a point where too much sensory stuff comes through the...
No, not too much.
No, no, not now, but I mean...
Not now. Too much? Not now. Only then.
Well, at that point, yeah, but sometimes, like, for instance, you know, in our modern-day life, you walk through the streets, and this is blaring, that's blaring, and the pictures are...
Not now.
Ajahn is saying that it is.
You know what I'm talking
same,
about?
But it is actually the same.
One object at a time.
It's, I know, it's only one object at a time. Yeah, yeah. Yet, it's like...
The difference is the thinking. The difference is the thinking about it. The story is different, but the objects are the same.
It would be the same if it could be measured in time. It would be the same amount of time, whether it's lots of it or.
But isn't see? Let me try. Visual object is going to be is visual object, and seeing. And sound is sound.
Yeah, I know.
It's not what there's more of it. It's that the there's more dosa in this case.
Well, there definitely was more of it as well.
So let's go back. Let's sort of try to pull this apart and say loud sound and soft sound. Any different?
Sound is sound.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whether it seems to be tremendous amounts of it or...
Sounds are different by conditions. Yeah. The sound is sound.
Yeah, I know that, but at the same time, there was that feeling of... I knew it was dosa, but I said, how can there be more? I mean, I just knew that there was more of it coming in. I don't know.
Every moment is uncontrollable.
Yeah.
But forgetful is there. Not knowing or understanding that there are dhammas. So there's a self.
Yeah, I knew that. I mean, mm-hmm. I went through the mind at the same time. But I said, wow. I mean, you have to really be... it was like being bombarded. It was like being bombarded.
No one can select object at all.
But with something we conventionally say is a loud sound, an unpleasant noise, or a sound that we like. A sound is sound, mm-hmm. but are there different?
The conditions for its arising are different. That's why it's loud or it's soft.
Okay. So the conditions are different for
the sounds of thunder,
pleasant
sounds,
or
sound
the sounds of the fall. Birds chirping.
We often hear it appears, it means it has arisen, and I've heard it many, many times before, but now I understand a little more, I think this is a very important point, and I would like to learn more, but sometimes I get the question, what means it appears, I have to explain, and I find it difficult, it appearing, prakot.
Now. Can you erase all visible object from this moment?
Never.
Mm-hmm. And it appears as visible object.
Yeah, but we cannot describe it so well when we explain it.
That which is seen,
yeah,
is real at that very moment when it appears, since it has arisen, but it will fall away instantly.
It appears to mm-hmm. citta.
Right.
Can we say that?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But do citta with forgetfulness or citta with
awareness? Citta which experiences it.
Yeah. But it means it has arisen. It means also then it has fallen away immediately.
It doesn't matter as long as there is sign or image of that that can be studied and understand
yeah.
as it is.
Yeah.
Is there any idea that cittas... Rupa, nama rupa come faster or slower?
Impossible.
More quickly, huh?
Impossible.
Oh, it's the same speed no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Same speed. So
mm-hmm.
I thought so, but it just.
It seems like one is longer, something like that, like whisper object and sound. Sound is shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, each rupa is the same.
So when they talk about 17 moments, those moments are always the same length?
Because it's the moment of citta.
Okay. So
yeah.
Citta has
arise, upada, diti, and pankha. The moment when it arises, the moment when it falls away, and between it is the moment of it hasn't fallen away yet.
I think this question of vettis is a little bit like the one we discussed about sickness. It's when we say, oh, it seems when you're sick there are more conditions for irritability or something like that actually only rupas appearing through the body sense, no more, no less than usual, but because of the particular rupas that are experienced, more conditions for the accumulated dosa to manifest. In the same way with sounds are just sounds regardless, but if there are a lot of particular kinds of sounds being
so
experienced, the story is different, so it's conditioned for dosa.
Yes. Can I go back to vipaka citta? We're talking about, we've used the example of sound, basically unpleasant noisy sound or, you know, birds chirping, whatever, pleasant sound, and the different conditions for their arising. When we talk about citta, let's say that citta that hears, that experiences sound, being a vipaka citta, we don't distinguish much between it being a kusala vipaka or kusala vipaka.
There are two, but we don't have to think about it because it appears and fall away so fast.
Right, and I guess that's where I know we discussed this even
and
yesterday.
Panya just begin to learn to know that it's not self, it's only a moment of experiencing an object. But later on, after becoming sotapanna, then understanding is keener and keener. Otherwise, it cannot understand the strong one and the weak one of akusala.
Right, so it's just vipaka citta, and there's no... But there's no quality to it, I guess, that says, in my mind, I guess, I've been associating vipaka citta that experience a pleasant sound
as being
kusala vipaka, and vipaka citta that experience an unpleasant sound as being akusala. But akusala vipaka citta. But in terms of satipatthana, we really at this point don't need to distinguish, because it's only the thinking after it's appeared that makes us think, oh, this must, in a pleasant situation, this must be akusala vipaka. But that's the situation, which is a concept, which is just thinking. The actual...
The moment of seeing is just the moment of seeing, but in fact, some moments of seeing conditioned by kusala karma condition experience inherently pleasant visible objects, and some conditioned by akusala karma experience inherently unpleasant visible objects. But we never know at any moment, because what we take from pleasant is all the thinking about what has been experienced. So it's not a matter of trying to figure or point out, because just as you say, otherwise it's the situation.
But there's feeling that arises with the citta.
With the moment of seeing.
A different feeling. At the moment of seeing, it's indifferent.
Feeling, yes. So at the moment of dosa, which follows that seeing, then of course it's unpleasant feeling, or if it's attachment, usually it's pleasant feeling or neutral feeling, but the moment of seeing.
But the actual vipaka citta is accompanied by indifferent feeling.
Yes, except for bodily.
Except for bodily experiences. Okay, well, let's take the bodily experiences then. If it's accompanied by unpleasant feeling.
That's good.
if it's accompanied by unpleasant feeling. I guess logically it's an akusala vipaka citta. But we can only experience the feeling
that we are trying to know or to understand whether citta at that moment is kusala vipaka or akusala vipaka. What about learning to understand that this moment is dhamma?
Yes.
Before they can know better and better about the deeper, the subtle quality of citta. Because even right now, seeing is not dhamma yet, or is it?
No.
And so how can we know whether it is akusala vipaka or kusala vipaka? So we have to begin with knowing that seeing is a reality, which is different from lopa or kusala, which arise after. And we don't have to call seeing vipaka either.
No.
We don't have to use any name for any dhamma, because dhammas themselves are different. But by understanding realities as dhamma, then we learn to know that dhammas are different. Not by listening to different kinds of citta and cetasikas and don't know that this moment is citta and cetasikas.
But I think you touched on the important point when you said that in terms of satipatthana, for example, the distinction is pretty meaningless.
Yes.
Between akusala vipaka and kusala vipaka. Yes. In the case of the javana jittas, obviously the kusala is to be developed and the akusala is to be eradicated. So there's some purpose in knowing the distinction. But when it comes to vipaka, it's really pretty much curiosity value
yes,
only.
Yes, exactly, exactly. it is curiosity, and I guess it's Maeve and I were talking about this the other day. It's not even... It's curiosity, but is it part of intellectually understanding?
About what?
Well, it's a logical picture I'm trying to create in my mind.
Yes. But what about now?
I know.
Yeah.
It's all me-based curiosity.
Yes.
I mean, you're not interested in someone else's kusala, but only our own, so...
Well, and it wasn't actually even out of curiosity. Oh, gee, you know what you know, something from the past is. It's for me. It was sort of logically trying to put the picture together, because I think
you again.
Yes, me again.
So, and then when will be the understanding of reality right now as not self? Because we just follow the thinking. It's all right to understand more about realities, but the curiosity about that which cannot be known, like now this moment, whether it's akusala or kusala vipaka, see?
I do see. It's
not one's own position or status to know this yet. The first thing is to understand realities as they are. In the beginning, without this, you go across this set to another set, which is impossible to get it.
So start at the beginning, which is...
So one knows about one's own panya.
Yes.
When will it know reality right now? If it's not when awareness arises, it's only I which thinks about realities.
I suppose, Constantine, it seems that in the beginning, even to think about that can be a big step. To think that sound is different as visible object to hardness. To think about that is very different from the story of...
What about the reality of it? Isn't sound different from hardness?
Yes, it is.
Yeah?
But I'm saying that initially... that thinking is a shift from the story. It's like part of a process to thinking about the realities and then gradually experiencing. But the story is very has a very strong hold.
I think that anyone knows about hardness and sound, But no one knows that they are Dhamma.
Mm.
And this is the point. Mm. Because even children know, see,
yes,
what's heart and what sound. But who will know that it's not self? Just different realities. And this is the point that can be known exactly by awareness itself. Because we can talk about sound, we can talk about seeing, we can talk about thinking. But when awareness is not aware, it's just the story.
Yes.
And no one can order and can have any understanding at will. But the development of understanding from hearing, considering, understanding will condition moment of awareness itself.
So if we listen to the Dhamma for 27 hours a day,
No. Intentionally. The idea of self again. Yeah.
So, yes, but we have to consider and read.
No, I think that that's no way to understand anatta-ness. That's the way to think that I have it, I gain it, it arises because I try so hard. But actually it's only the detachment from the clinging, even the idea of I will, because at that moment it has arisen already. Thinking that way has arisen. No understanding that thinking is not me at all. So it's not trying to have good thought, good thinking, right thinking, but no understanding that it's conditioned to be wrong or right, good or bad, see? And this is the point that Lopa can drag you along again. Okay. So it's so powerful because it's hidden. And it can lure and deceive that it's right, it's good to have such conditions for the arising of understanding, listening for 12 or 24 hours.
So we should go shopping.
Again. Should or should not. It's only thinking. It has a reason. But no understanding. It's
but
thinking.
Not
even they are not the same, but they are all not self. To understand that which has a reason, even thinking. Not just follow the idea of self, again, that I'll go shopping.
You talk about, you know, for the development of understanding, we need to hear the Dhamma and consider it, and the intellect.
Or instead of saying I, it can be the nature of the reality itself. Like hearing wisely will condition right understanding.
This is what I'm getting to when we talk about considering an intellectual understanding. And we were talking the other day, a couple of us, and wondering if by what we think of as intellectual understanding is by what you mean when you're talking about intellectual understanding.
It's intellectual understanding, no one. Understanding is ajetasika.
Yes.
It's panya ajetasika.
Yes. So it's the understanding that arises.
It can condition right awareness and the develop panya later.
So it's a particular kind of that's important, I think, because sometimes when we say intellectual understanding, we say just intellectual understanding. You're saying that it's actually kusala, that's the kusala jetasika, and that's the only kind of intellectual understanding that is going to be a condition for
higher understanding.
Mm. That's helpful to clarify. I know it seems like it might be obvious, but sometimes it's not so obvious.
Even now, we cannot understand what sankhara khandhas are performing the function because there are 52 jetasikas. One is the feeling, the other is memory or sanya jetasika, and the rest 50 are sankhara khanda. So all of them now are performing the function, leading unknowingly to better and better understanding. But the self cannot wait. So they find the wrong way to have more understanding.
You mean the self, you mean Lopa,
with attachment to the idea of I.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trying to find a way, trying to look for a shortcut, a faster way, thinking this, in terms of a particular activity.
This is the point for those who study the teachings and really don't understand the meaning of realities as anatta. So they think that since it's taught in the Tipitaka about doing this and that, they think it's doing, but actually the Buddha himself pointed out what's the cause and conditions.
It's just to do with this in relation to my understanding of awareness, let alone understanding with awareness. In one of the texts I've been reading about right mindfulness, and the text talks about a disciple will dwell in contemplation of mind objects, knows when it is in him and knows when it arises and knows when it is. Could you discuss, because I get very confused as to how you are not talking I there.
Awareness is real, and the term awareness is for that which is wholesome, cetasika. Not just ordinary term that we use for being aware of anything. I'm aware that I'm sitting, that's not sati. Because anyone know that?
Yeah.
I am sitting. But awareness is that which arises all kind of wholesome citta. At moment of dana, it's not you at all, but it's the sati which is aware of giving arising at that moment. And at moment of abstaining from ill deeds and speeches, it's not you, but it's that sati which is aware, and then the cetasika which abstain arises, and it abstain from such and such ill deeds. And when citta is unwholesome with lobha or dosa and moha, sati is aware of the unwholesome qualities. So sati and panya will grow after hearing about anattaness, not self. So there are many different degrees of sati. Sati at level of dana, sati at level of sila, sati at level of samatha, and sati at level of developing understanding from hearing and considering, that will condition the moment of direct awareness with understanding. This moment, there is no one at all, no one and nothing. There are only realities appearing, and awareness arises with understanding, but at level of listening, considering, until there is awareness of a reality. Like we know that hardness cannot belong to anyone. We call hardness here as table, see. But just hardness is real. But the idea of this shape is called a table, is thinking about hardness. So we think a lot this morning when there is no awareness. They're all gone. Can anyone keep anything from thinking? But at moment of being aware of a reality, panya sees that only this moment will bring about right understanding of reality as it is, because hardness cannot be anything. It cannot belong to anyone. It just appears to know that it's hard. That's all. To know the hard thing, see? What's the use of knowing hardness, sound and visible object, and the idea and concept? Useless. Just arise and falls away.
So when the disciple dwells in contemplation of feelings, what's happening there?
You mean satipatthana?
I think so.
Okay. Because you see that feeling is real. Everything is real. And everything is not self or thing. But each reality has its own characteristic. So vedana of feeling is real. There is feeling, and feeling does not belong to anyone at all, no matter it's pleasant or unpleasant feeling. It arises by its proper conditions.
when it's the pleasant object, can it condition the unpleasant feeling? See, in order to understand that even feeling is not self, Buddha taught a lot of feeling as not self. And we can understand theoretically that feeling is arisen by condition. It cannot arise without any conditions as well. Even by knowing this, no awareness of feeling yet. So can we select to be aware of feeling, or awareness arises unexpectedly and the object of awareness is also unexpected? No choice at all. And by this, one will understand better and better about the anattaness of realities. Each moment, it has a reason. No matter what one is thinking, that thinking has a reason already.
And I think John is particularly interested in the reference in the suttas to contemplate feeling and feeling, because does this indicate anything that precedes the moment of awareness?
Okay, can anyone stop thinking?
Stop thinking.
Can. It follows all the time. Even so, the thinking is not self. But one can see that when it's right thinking, it can condition awareness right then. Mm. Or whenever there is awareness of a reality, there is also thinking about that reality. Not thinking about other thing else, but thinking about that reality. So thinking can arise by conditions. If there is attachment to the idea of shouldn't we have thinking, or should there be only understanding of hardness itself or a reality, that is wrong again, because thinking that moment itself again. So it's the panya which develops very keen so that it can become detached from any kind of object, no matter it's thinking or feeling.
So you're saying that the moment of awareness could be called a moment of thinking. If we're saying awareness of feeling, for example,
I think that there are conditions for each reality, not particular one, that there's condition that right then, at that very moment. It is by Sankhara Khanda, and we don't know, but we can understand different conditions little by little. For example, the succession of the arising and falling away of citta, the anantara patriya, see? We don't have to call or name it at all, but it depends on the understanding of reality, because there is not just a reality, there is other reality when sati is aware. Different characteristics arise and appear, and there can be the understanding of nama, which experiences that as not self. And if one doesn't have to call it citta, or mano, or manasa, or hataya, or any word at all, when there is the understanding of reality, no need to name or to call it anything. Otherwise, at moment of naming or calling it, it's not the understanding of that object. It has to understand other moment instead.
Another moment, though, there could be naming.
Any moment, unexpected moment. Mm. Otherwise, the self doesn't like it this way again.
Kunzi Ching, could I just read a, and I apologize for not noting where I took this from. I think it might have been from the website, but maybe someone will recognize it. And there's just a part I wonder if you could comment on. It says, when a person realizes with wisdom that all conditioned things are impermanent, then he would tire of dukkha. This is the path of purity. That word tire, then he would tire of dukkha. Can you comment on that?
Are you tired now?
I don't think it means like that. That's a different tiredness, isn't it? What does that mean?
To become detached by seeing the arising and falling away of realities, no reality is permanent. No reality can be self. They just arise by conditions. They perform their functions. That's all. From birth to death, no one, just the different elements only. Mm-hmm. So they would be. They do not belong to anyone. By Panya, which experienced directly, can there be still the idea of self and the attachment to that idea of self?
No, not at that. Mm-hmm. Not at that stage.
Can one say, by Taya, understand the futility of dharmas, which is impermanent?
Nothing has any allure any longer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A relief. There is.
Chai-chai.
When that happens, sorry.
Chai-chai.
Chai-chai. Understanding. Ignorance.
Depends. I have a question about Adhitana. Adhitana Parami resolution or determination. The perfection of Adhitana, and in the suttas we often read about the four Adhitanas, the four Adhitanas of truthfulness, satya, relinquishment, chaga, calm, upasama, and panya. What is the connection between these four foundations? They're usually translated as the four foundations, these four Adhitanas, and Adhitana Parami.
Kumila, could you tell us about Adhitana Parami?
Yes, because a foundation is something which is firm, stable. And the Parami of Adhitana is to be stable, firm in the resolution, to go on developing kusala and understanding, so we can distinguish four dhammas which are stable, which are foundation dhammas. It's the same idea of being.
But when we talk about Adhitana, as in Adhitana Parami, it's referring to a particular chetasika. And here these four foundations, satya, chaga, upasama, panya, seem to be referring to different chetasikas, so it seems there can't be exactly subdivisions of Adhitana.
But when we study the paramis, it is not always so that they refer to a particular chetasika, like Kanti.
It can be a collection, that's true.
Different kusalas together with Satipatthana.
Yes, right. So we can say that when it's referring to Adhitana Parami, it's really referring to these particular qualities in combination, because some of these, like Satya, also have their own Parami, like Satya Parami. So it's like it's included here as support for Adhitana as well as having its own particular Parami. Is that correct?
Let's talk about this moment, because this moment can be parami because it concerns with the development of understanding to understand reality right now. And at moment of having such satta to develop right understanding, is there no satya parami, no kanti parami, no virya parami, and no adhidana parami? Because it doesn't mean that one has to arise singly.
No, we must all.
Okay. At that very moment, there can be many parami together. Yeah.
So Sarah, you were saying about them as being like a foundation, so very strong, but they can be weak too.
Right now, strong or weak? See?
Yes.
They have to develop with Satipatthana as support for understanding and awareness to grow. There cannot be development of understanding without such a
parami and without calm, without chaga, relinquishment developing together with it. But when we read about these four adhitanas or these four foundations in the suttas, are they particularly referring to adhitana parami?
Every gosala
is referring.
All ten.
Okay, all pointing to the paramis.
And to adhitana.
So we could say any references in the Tipitaka to any kind of kusala is actually pointing to the paramis being developed with Satipatthana.
In order to become enlightened. It has to build up from very weak one, like even the Sammapatthana moment of beginning to think, even slightly, to abstain from evil. See, it will bring to more understanding and seeing what is evil, so Panya can eliminate evil.
So in this sense, just as anything we read in any of the suttas or in any part or the Vinaya or any part of the Tipitaka points to the development of Satipatthana, we can see anything we read in any part also points to the development of the paramis with Satipatthana.
Yeah, that's why it's not right to say first sila, then samadhi, then panya, what we hear so often. Is that if there's a certain order.
Actually, Nina, I was thinking something like that the other day, because I was reading about the precepts, and actually it made me realise that I had a different understanding, and I thought about them more like happening sequentially. But it was just pointing out that the first one about not killing and not doing any harm was like the primary one, and the others flowed from that, and it made me realise that whereas I had thought maybe not to lie or to steal was for kusala, I could then see that it actually not to harm the other, like to lie can harm the other and to steal harms the other, that it all tied in together, so that first one of doing no harm, like captured all the others
at
the same time.
Who is full of metta or develops metta, it will be a condition to keep the precepts,
because
you are concerned with the other.
That's
when
right.
You think of the other and not of yourself, it will really help. But all five are very important.
They are, but it's like they come naturally with the first. That was
yeah, what, because when you know, well, when Panya knows better the kusala and the akusala chittas and knows better the danger and disadvantage of akusala, it is a condition for less akusala.
Actually, that leads to another.
We could just make that one into a question for Khunsu Chin first. So Maeve's comment was that the first precept is, could I say foremost, or is number one, because from the first precept of not killing
or harming,
to take it in a wider context, the other precepts follow.
What one loves most?
Well, that one.
For each one.
Oneself.
Okay. One's life. Would you like you to be killed?
Oh, I see. I see. Yes.
No.
So to think of the other. Say no. Tom is very good. He's very helpful to me. I don't understand the difference between yes and no.
Would you agree in that case that there is significance in the first precept being the first precept in that sense?
I think that it's the most, the heaviest.
Yeah. The most serious.
Yes.
Because it goes against how important I am and how important my life
so
is.
So bad enough to kill the others.
Yes.
But I think it just to refers to killing, life. To taking of life, not to just harming in general. So, I mean, one may harm when one utters.
Yes, but then that the harming is like a degree, isn't it? The killing is the worst, but then...
But the precept actually just refers to not killing.
And also harming.
But also harming, yes. Also harming.
That's hurting or hurting someone else
in that sense.
But it was actually the harming that made me think of how the other precepts harmed as
they
well as
harm,
the first.
They all harm others.
Yes. Yes. There was another question actually, I suppose, connected with that, about metta for sentient being, but that must be a concept. So yes. When metta arises,
mm-hmm.
and there is awareness of metta, it is awareness of anamma.
Anamma. Different from the moment of metta with being as object.
Yes.
I was talking with Anne the other day about Jonathan's question about the six doors to distinguish them and first more coarse and then more refined. Was that right? Or we talked about that.
We did.
That is a good point to bring up again.
It was about metta. About moving from intellectual to
so important,
and then to
you're doing a very good job of both of you explaining it.
Nina wants you to.
I'm trying to remember what it was. That's why I think you're both doing so.
In the bus, Jonathan brought it up about six doors, and that in the beginning, it's coarse. The distinguishment between them, and it can become more refined, and we found it an important point.
You did.
Yeah.
Are you referring to the Thai?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, the Thai.
Remember.
Okay.
Well, the question I asked was about the doorways being mixed, which is the normal
very
state.
Very important, yeah.
And then I asked if there's a moment of weak awareness, can it be manifested as just less mixing of the doorways,
mm-hmm.
a little less mixing up of the doorways.
You mean misunderstanding when you say mixing the doorways? You don't mean
sound
combining. You mean
sound.
You take sound for...
Well, I think it means the world of people and things. We combine all the data from the different doorways to create the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in this sense, they're mixed up. They're not distinguished as individual doorways. And when there's a moment of beginning awareness, it's not as though the world is just one doorway at that moment, but it manifests as just a less mixing up of the doorways.
I'm sorry, I remember having the conversation, but I don't remember what I said or what it is you're hoping I might say now.
Less mixing up when you start
important
thinking,
point.
You mean?
Yes.
Well,
like
the mixing up,
yes.
I think, is the thinking. Yeah. Mixes up the doorways.
But if I think, just I could be just as confused if I just thought I was thinking about, amongst all this fantastic sound, if I thought I was just concentrating on one and blocking out the rest, that could be just as deluded.
Yes. But that wouldn't be awareness, would it?
No.
Well, maybe Ajahn Sikshin can comment on
what
we're trying to say.
Mixing the eye door and the mind door now?
Mm-hmm. Very much.
Mm-hmm.
We can agree about this. Yes, it is.
You got one in.
And we don't want to.
Again?
I know.
We're sitting here trying to learn something so that we won't.
Just for the sake of understanding.
Mm.
I don't think it matters at all if there's mixing up, as long as you know, understanding develops. Yes. It's just ordinary
daily life,
natural daily life.
Ignorance and confusion, ignorance, yeah.
Did you want to pursue natural at all?
Sarah and I were discussing, often you say it is so natural, and we were discussing about accumulations, because we talked about how accumulations affect the way one studies Dhamma. And I had been thinking about accumulations that I'm aware of to want to get ready and not be so spontaneous and different things like that. And so when you say natural, I was thinking, hard for me to be natural like that.
Like that.
Natural? I'm natural. But it was like to be natural was to be forced, was to force. So we were exploring what natural might mean. And Sarah suggested that it is like whatever is there. Like
see now, is natural or not?
Yes.
Thinking, natural.
Mm-hmm.
What is not natural?
Thinking to try and make it different.
That's it. So you know that that is not natural.
Yes. Yes.
And when there's such thinking, there can never be the understanding because it's not natural.
Are you equating, when you say that, not natural as thinking of one of self?
No, I mean that even that is natural,
yes,
by conditions.
Yes.
But when one is trying,
yes,
not to know it, to do something different,
that's what's
that is not natural. Yeah.
Like mixing doorways is very, very natural, but trying not to mix doorways or to focus on one doorway, that is unnatural.
Yes, or trying not to look out of the window,
right,
when
the
tape is off.
To the table, thinking one has to have listen more or one has to read more in order for awareness, that is unnatural.
It's just occurred to me, is mixing doorways, is that just not, that's thinking about what is seen or heard, etc. Isn't that
thinking?
It's just ignorance. Thinking, yes. Mm. We talk about mixing doorways. I know, sort of intellectually, I think I understand what you're referring to.
Like
or
now,
what I was referring to.
Like now, it seems that there's seeing and hearing and thinking all happening at the same time.
That's lack of awareness.
Lack of
understanding.
Awareness. But it's natural. So even at these moments, there can be awareness. But if there's a trying to separate them or trying to focus on one doorway at a time, this is unnatural.
So what is right concentration?
Whenever awareness arises, it is aware by itself of any object.
And at that moment, there is right concentration with it, without any special attention or focusing.
But not try.
Because Riya arises with almost every citta. No need to have more or to try to have special one.
Sorry, maybe I still don't quite understand the difference between mindfulness and concentration.
He's talking about concentration.
Concentration arises with each citta. No need to have extra one.
Ajahn, in the first sermon of the Buddha, when he came to talk to his lost disciples, he also mentioned the middle way. What exactly is the middle way? Could you remind me?
Right understanding with right awareness, all eight are middle way. All eight jetasikas.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Ajahn, I was putting the glass down that I
didn't hear your answer. The middle way, right understanding with
right awareness.
Right awareness. Yes. And then something else.
And right effort and the rest, the Eightfold Path. Yeah.
Last time we were here, I asked exactly the same question and got exactly the same answer.
And that hasn't changed the position on that one.
Because again, people misunderstand and think of the middle way in terms of not doing this and not doing that and being something in the middle, but actually it's not in the middle of wrong and wrong. It's right understanding, yes.
I came across something just the other night that made me think about perhaps in our early discussions. You talked about being a friend in the Dharma. And it was the last, to do with the last words of the Buddha. And I won't read it all because it's quite long. But when the Buddha knew that he was going to die, and he said that he would no longer be with his disciples, and he said, "But you must not worry, for the norm and discipline taught and enjoined by me, they shall be your teachers now that I am gone." And then he asked, were there any questions? And there was silence. And he asked three times, were there any questions? And no one asked any questions. And then finally, and this is the part that reminded me of what you said, then said the Exalted One, "Maybe, brethren, it is out of respect for the Master that ye do not speak to me. Then, as friend to friend, please ask." And still, they did not ask anything. And Ananda said, "Well, it's because they know, they understand." And the Buddha said, "Yes, they understand." But that was, I thought that was really quite important that the Buddha made a distinction between the question that can be asked to the master or the teacher, and the question that is asked friend to friend. It's a different kind of questioning.
I think that someone would like to know, but wouldn't like to ask.
Yes. Yes.
Depending on what that person is thinking with respect. Like Anatta Bindika, yes. He didn't ask any question to Buddha at all. He didn't ask Buddha any question at all.
Is that because of his respect?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for a Thai to understand because they have a word, grangjai, that yes. explains it completely.
Oh, okay.
But
yes.
I'm just joking.
But
you're right.
The friend-to-friend reference, is that significant, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Not like teacher.
Mm-hmm. It's easier. Mm-hmm. Easier to ask friend-to-friend.
So now that you mention it, I've had my doubts all along. And I'm like,
sorry, John.
Well, the answer might be, now that you've given me permission, I have had my doubts all along. A few things I'd like to ask you, please.
On the bus the other day in Thai, I mean, Jonathan just was giving me a few small tasters,
snippets.
But someone was asking about the bhikkhunis in the time of the Buddha, and you were making a comment about not suitable for bhikkhunis, and that's why originally no bhikkhuni order, because
the lifestyle
too tough, too much mm-hmm. hardship. By too tough, do you mean because of having to live in caves and this sort of thing, just the general living style.
Otherwise, there will never be two sets.
Never be two
sexes.
Sexes.
Male, female.
Yes. Would you say a little more?
They're different.
Yeah, I see. So unsuitable for, I mean, suitable for bhikkhus, but not suitable for bhikkhunis. Mm-hmm. But then later when he ordained Mahaprajapati and the other bhikkhunis at their requests, I think the comment was because of their special virtues, but does it not mean it was still unsuitable for them?
For whom?
For the bhikkhunis like Mahaprajapati.
They could become arahata. That's the reason why Buddha gave permission for all women.
Women.
Because they could become.
They were capable of becoming arahats in their lifetime.
There was a follow-up question which interested me too, and about the fact that if a person becomes arahata and does not go forth, then they would pass away. So, is it? And your comment just then, is it the situation then that if the order of bhikkhunis hadn't been established, that some of those people may not have become arahata until later in that life, until there was time for them to die or something like that?
Please say it again. What's the point?
Well, you just said a minute ago that because they were capable of becoming
in the Buddha's time,
therefore he established the order.
Because anyone who has become arahata will not live like lay people anymore.
Mm. So you can't say hypothetically if he hadn't established the bhikkhuni order, would those people not have become enlightened?
You mean that anyone can become after becoming a bhikkhuni?
No, what he's saying is the people like Mahaprajapati, mm-hmm. if they, who were capable of becoming and who did become arahats, mm-hmm. if they hadn't been ordained, would they still have become arahats and died immediately, or
all arahatas? If that person
doesn't ordain, will die that day, mm-hmm. that time.
Just hypothetical.
Mm. And
when one has become, then one knows.
Mm-hmm. Could one say, with regard to when the bhikkhuni order died out, could one say that the fact that people were no longer capable of becoming arahats was a condition for the order to die out? Could one say this?
Since the women and the should be ordained like bhikkhu, why should there be bhikkhuni on and on and on?
Mm. If they're not capable of becoming arahats, then no need for the bhikkhuni order, because it's unsuitable for them. This is what
even in Buddha's time it's not suitable.
Even in the Buddha's time it's unsuitable, but some could become arahats. So afterwards, if it was not suitable and they were not capable of becoming arahats, then no reason for it.
In the Buddha's time, did those who became bhikkhus, were they all capable of becoming arahats?
No.
Say again.
In the Buddha's time. Were they all capable of becoming arahats in that life?
No. Otherwise, people will become bhikkhu.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I put on that robe and there I go.
It's a good practice.
There were other reasons why people became monks, apart from developing an understanding of the teachings.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was from medical treatment, according to something I read, because the order of monks had the patronage of the best doctor at the time. So people with diseases that were difficult to cure.
Well, that might be true even today, but it wouldn't be a right reason.
No, it wouldn't be a right reason at all.
No.
Monks become monks because they renounce the world, give up the world. And I was thinking that at a moment of Satipatthana, there is no world, so it is like a moment of renunciation.
Different lifestyle, depending on accumulation.
Right. But that renouncing of the world can be in the moment.
It's when kusala arises.
Yes.
But if lifestyle is important, then doesn't it suggest that for ourselves, lifestyle, some attention should be paid to lifestyle? And because something that came up in
Betty, would you like to sit in the noisy bus?
noisy bus. It doesn't matter.
Really? Oh. Try again. It sounds like one of my yes no.
Give another one.
Try again. Hello, no. I don't know.
Try a yes.
No, seriously. I mean, between being a monk or not being a monk, at least the monkhood in this day and age. It's just the creation of another society where you have all of the poles and the concepts that plague everybody else, whether they're in society or they're in the monkhood. It's really the same thing all over again. I can't see that it makes a difference, except that. Because the monk, although he puts on his robe and he follows the Vinaya, if he follows the Vinaya totally, yes, then it makes a difference. But if he doesn't follow the Vinaya totally, then it doesn't make any difference. It's the same as being an ordinary person.
I'm just reflecting, something came up in a discussion, so maybe you just comment generally that interests we have other than the Dhamma are, well, an obstacle, if you like, to the development of understanding. If we're a person who's always racing around pursuing other interests in life and entertainment and career and so on and so forth, because these are all like agusala things, and we know the importance of study.
And know yourself.
Knowing oneself.
Accumulation.
By accumulation. Mm-hmm.
This
question.
Surfing.
Surfing's all right anyway. It's it's cool. No agusala in
Mike
surfing.
Do that.
No agusala there. So
this talking about right livelihood and should do and shouldn't do, it goes right back to where we were earlier, which is we'll do what we have accumulations to do. We can't make ourselves do otherwise. Right? So talking about right livelihood really doesn't seem like as much like a direction to do or not to do as indicating what
right livelihood
is.
Right livelihood comes back to a moment.
Yes.
Virati Chaita Seeker at this moment in the course of one's life. It's
because didn't you start, Jonathan, wondering about whether we should look at our lifestyles and look to whether they, how clearly they conform with right livelihood?
Not quite. I was just bringing up something.
Yeah.
I had a conversation, so I'm just sort of bringing up a general topic, but it's not so much a question of right livelihood per se, I don't know what you understand by that, but I think of it as being related to one's occupation.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. And what one chooses. What one does with one's spare
time. There's a
time,
lot of the day that's not related to one's occupation.
Yes, that's
also,
right.
You know,
yeah, but livelihood is not just occupation. It's basically what you do with your life on a daily basis in a conceptual terms. And if you're doing something that is basically akusala and harmful for other beings, then obviously it's wrong livelihood.
Well, anyway, apart from that issue, I mean, it wasn't directed towards right livelihood as...
It was more lifestyle.
It was more lifestyle. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, even lifestyle, we're talking about making choices, it sounds like.
Right.
And I guess where I'm going back to is, there are choices that seem to be more helpful and wholesome than others.
Yeah, that's the question.
Yes.
Right. But I think
yes.
Your earlier comment is spot on. That,
so who's
it's
making
a matter
the choice?
So who's making the choice? That's right. So it's going to happen because of conditions
right,
and accumulation.
It's just conditioned
right.
That way.
You go hunt deer every winter. That happens because of conditions.
Mm, yeah. It's like somebody you asked before, you know, why did somebody become a monk in those days or whatever? And I can tell you what told me when I asked him why he decided to become a monk. In his case, he really feels he wanted to make a difference for those around him. But where that came from, or there was no indication of it. It was dormant, you know, before he became a monk. So there must have been the accumulations from previous lives or whatever that caused him, and the conditions were right at that time, and okay, he became a monk. And so the same could be said with any of these other people who became monks at any time, at any age, at any place. So something like that.
By conditions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Accumulations and conditions.
Mm-hmm. And accumulations.
It's a good example that you can never predict the conditions,
yeah.
Right? You never would have imagined, you know, usually say, well, I should have seen this happen or that happen.
Yeah.
But you never thought.
Right, and it also taught me another lesson, you know, what appears to us on the surface might not be there at all, you know, or those could be conditions, but there were stronger conditions at work that caused him to suddenly change his mind, at least from my
vantage
point.
We can't extrapolate from that or any other example and say, therefore, it's generally good to become a monk, or therefore, it's generally good not to go shopping or something, because different accumulations, different... conditions,
yeah.
And again,
conditions.
Very striking example that you.
I asked a question the other day about right view, samadhi, and I'd like to just add another one to it. When we read in the sutta, the Mahajatarasaka Sutta in Majjhima, about the two kinds of right view, there's the right view. Not accompanied by the asavas, and asava referring to the lokutra cittas when particular anusyas are eradicated, and the right view, which is in English affected by the taints, and here they have partaking of merit, ripening on the side of attachment, understanding there is what is given, what is offered, what is sacrificed, fruit and result, good and bad actions, this world, the other world, this is right view affected by the taints. Is this kind of samadhi referred to, is it referring to mundane right view of the path, or is it referring to samadhi, any kind of right understanding?
Any kind,
okay. Right. Yeah. So any kind of panya, other than...
Samatiti has to be samatiti.
Yes. So any kind of samatiti.
And so here when it's saying, oh, understanding is through good and bad actions, in other words, understanding karma, but this may just be in general, not particularly understanding mm-hmm. of karma through the development of the path. So it may just be like general knowledge, right view about confidence in karma in a very general sense.
And it's kusala.
Just any kusala. Okay. And here it said in a note that it's mundane right view, a meritorious factor conducive to favorable rebirth, but doesn't transcend conditional existence. So favorable conduces to favorable rebirth, just in the sense that any kusala does.
I was asking Jonathan on the bus about, again, it's related to the earlier question about we're always hoping that by listening to more or reading 8 hours a day as opposed to 6 hours a day, mm-hmm. that we'll have a sudden breakthrough in our understanding, that all of the accumulated ignorance will be falling away as a result of us hearing the right phrasing of the Dharma, the right sentence that makes, that's what Ajahn means when she says right livelihood or right view or right understanding. In our discussion, we came to the conclusion that idea of a sort of a quick one insight making up for many layers of ignorance is not realistic, Ajahn. Is that true? I mean, I think it's obviously true, but you could comment on it.
At the right time, anything can happen.
So, at the right time, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's right.
Accumulation of panya, ready for that right time, right moment.
So even though we feel that we are really lost in many, many levels of ignorance and lopa and dosa, actually this doesn't preclude or prevent at the right time awareness arising?
Accumulation of panya conditions at such moment, yeah.
Because we don't know our own accumulations at all, or don't know the accumulations that are there.
Yeah. No expectation for any reality to arise.
Yeah. Well, that's, at this moment, that's very pleasantly surprising for you to remind me of that, Ajahn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Otherwise, panya is not keen enough to understand that moment as anatta at all.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back to yesterday's discussion about nama and rupa, and how there's no rupa in nama? Several of us were talking about this afterward. And I guess knowing the difference between rupa and nama won't occur until there is enough understanding and awareness to know when the experience of seeing arises, and when visual object arises. But in the meantime, we find ourselves thinking about it and maybe imagining what it might be like. And I guess this sort of encompasses also the comment about jitas arising in the dark. Isn't that what we were saying?
We were.
Darkness in darkness, yes. Mm-hmm. So when I think of, and seeing is the one where it comes to mind, seeing, experiencing, light, whether there is, and I guess this is a question that I can probably give my own. Well, I don't know what, this is where we got stuck when we were discussing it, seeing, experiencing color or light. And the question is there color or light in the experience of seeing? So I guess I'm asking you that question.
I think the question you asked after the discussion was just the idea of no rupa in the nama,
mm-hmm.
not particularly related to seeing an visible object, but that's an example of it.
Yes.
So just on the general subject of no rupa in the nama.
What is nama is that which doesn't have rupa at all, like seeing, hearing. The element which arises to experience an object, whenever it arises, it has to experience.
Right. So there's no sound in hearing?
No.
And there's
hearing no, hears sound.
That's right. Hearing hears sound. Because I think, again, it's using one's, you know, without the awareness to know. It's using one's imagination of sound and hearing. Well, I guess I've got them all mixed up together.
Usually, visible object appears, sound appears, without any understanding of that
yes.
which experiences them.
Yes.
One at a time.
But the experience of sound
is real.
Is real.
Is that what we call citta?
Yes.
The faculty of experiencing
yes.
an object.
Yes.
Now it is seeing, now it hears, now mm-hmm. it thinks.
So I guess I'm stabbing around at something that only awareness can know, I guess. When one experiences sound...
Hearing hears it.
Hearing hears it.
No one that experiences
anything. Well, yes, anything. Okay, here, yes, I realize that. So hearing hears sound.
It cannot see.
It cannot think. See it, it cannot think about it.
Different elements.
Mm-hmm. I recognize that, but when hearing experiences sound, I guess my question comes down to, and again, I think I can answer it, is the experiencing of sound. Well, hearing experiences sound. So hearing hears
sound.
Sound.
No one hears except hearing arises and it hears sound.
But if the awareness is of sound and not hearing of sound,
mm-hmm. just sound, past, gone,
right?
Completely.
But there's no hearing of it.
There is hearing, but there is no awareness
of
hearing.
At that time.
Yeah.
But at the moment of awareness, when sound appears, it's not hearing of it. It is the characteristic of sound that hearing experienced. Completely with a completely different characteristic from hearing, so maybe hearing can also be experienced as a. There can also be awareness of hearing.
Yes.
That the two dhammas, hearing and sound, have completely different characteristics. Yes. So if sound
together,
if there is
well,
a
that's what that's what you just said. They have to come together, but there is no. Well, I guess this is where I'm trying to look at what the. And I know the intellect, I mean, I know the answers we all give to these questions, but okay, hearing experiences sound completely different characteristics. The characteristics are that sound is just sound, arises and falls
yes.
away, and hearing
that
experiences
that experiencing of
sound.
Yes.
In the sequence, I mean, the sound has to arise first. For the hearing of sound.
Sound is
to
a
arise.
Condition for hearing
mm-hmm.
to
yes.
arise. Without sound, there could be
no hearing.
Hearing at
mm-hmm.
all.
Not
because hearing cannot experience an object if
right.
sound hasn't already
right.
arisen. And if there is awareness and understanding, because any dhamma can be the
mm-hmm.
object, so
mm-hmm.
sound can be the object of awareness, or hearing can be the awareness of object. So at that moment, when awareness arises,
mm-hmm.
it is just that one characteristic. So if sound
is the object of awareness. There's no idea or there's no hearing at all. It's just the characteristic of sound.
No hearing at all as object of awareness.
It's object of awareness, so it's just the characteristic of sound.
Well, this is
which
this
has
and
nothing,
this is get,
no okay, hearing this, in it.
Well, and I understand all that piece intellectually. But when you're, Jonathan, you just hit on something that might help. There's no awareness. When there's awareness of sound, there is no awareness of hearing
right,
at that moment.
Only one reality.
Only just that one reality. So it's just the world, the whole world, everything. It's just that experience of sound at that moment. Just the characteristic of sound which appears.
But as we were saying earlier, it doesn't mean that the world as we see it suddenly ceases to present itself at that moment, but just that there's some level of awareness of one aspect of the mixed up world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, in a way it does, because when there is, at the moment when sound appears, there isn't any mixed up world or any other thinking, or it is just the characteristic of sound which appears. That is the world. That's all, just for that moment. And then the usual thinking and mix-ups and all the rest of it. But when characteristic of sound appears, there's no hearing in it, there's no thinking about it, there's no other mix-up, because it just has its particular characteristic which appears. And the same, if it is hearing, it is just that reality which experiences sound, nothing else in it at all. And the same for visible object or seeing or any other dharma. But it's the natural way, because it's not a matter of focusing or stopping or trying to be aware of sound or anything like that.
I think what I'm trying to do, I think what's happening here, what I'm thinking is trying to imagine what awareness is, what you're saying. I understand intellect, you know, I follow it. It makes sense, but I guess what I'm looking for is, what's awareness like?
John, please tell us.
We'd like to learn.
No, thank you for your explanations. I mean, it's good to hear it again.
But I think that it really does come down to the very clear understanding of the realities, because when there is very clear understanding of what sound is, it's completely distinct from hearing.
Yes.
This is the way that awareness does develop. Because
right.
If there isn't a clear understanding of the realities, if the hearing and the sound are mixed together, the seeing and visible object, then awareness cannot and does not develop. So panya is the key.
So panya is the key to developing the understanding of what
and the awareness.
And the awareness.
Yes.
Well, we're making progress, because I mean, for so many years of our lives, we had no idea that
we think hearing and sound is mixed up together. Mm-hmm.
That there was nothing to mix up. That there was a real world out there that everything coexisted.
Exactly.
So.
Well, and I was going to say, it's not like you can't have one without the other, because because you can't have hearing without sound, but the awareness and the experiencing of sound as sound and hearing as hearing.
They're two different dharmas. We're
so
used to thinking I hear, that's why I made that comment. So used to thinking I hear sounds without understanding, just different namas, dhatus that experience the sound. And only by really clearly understanding the distinction between the characteristic of hearing and the characteristic of sound can awareness really begin to develop. Because otherwise people ask what's awareness and want to find out what awareness is, but there has to be the understanding of what awareness can be aware of.
Mm-hmm. And it arises with kusala citta. Mm-hmm. It's not at the same moment of hearing, but afterwards.
I start. You've said with only with the understanding Can the awareness arise?
Can it develop?
Can it develop? But doesn't it go sort of in tandem, hand in hand? Because without some level of awareness, the understanding can't develop either. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Well, there's awareness with every kind of kusala, but if you're referring to awareness of realities, it has to be with understanding together.
Yes, well, Ajahn's was shaking her head, yes. That
little by little.
Little by little, banya and awareness and understanding, yeah. Awareness and understanding, little by little.
I thought she was nodding.
Her nodding her head. For example, a moment of awareness, can one know how much understanding is there? Even it's there, but how much it is? Just a moment of being aware. There must be panya, but very, very weak.
I was going to say, it depends on the level of awareness. Mm-hmm. And the level of and the level of awareness depends on the level of understanding. Mm. Are they not interdependent?
They arise together, yes. But the growth of panya is not so quick at all.
The growth of awareness is greater than is quicker than the growth of panya?
What about awareness at this very moment? How much panya is there? Cold. See? But it develops when awareness it arises.
Yes, that's it's the experience. They build on each other. I guess it's the experiencing coming closer to the here we are again with sort of intellectual understanding.
What about present reality? Yeah. See,
all mixed up.
Because we are thinking about future moments, mm-hmm. unexpectedly.
That's right. That's exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we have trouble to know the present reality, what the present reality is.
And the future is as hard as now, or easier?
Even harder. Mm-hmm. Impossible.
Impossible.
Ajahn, you asked the question of somebody, are you aware of, do you know how much awareness is there now?
Whenever awareness arises, it is aware of a reality. But how much panya, right understanding of reality is right then?
So the answer to that could be a little or a lot.
Depending. When it's lot, it's lot. It's very little. We cannot say there's a lot.
That's true. I agree with that.
But it's not...
Not
so
on a scale
clear.
Of 10. It's a lot
it's
like an
so
earthquake
clear.
With a Richter scale or something like that. No, okay. Right. It's okay.
But it's there. It can be known.
There.
Yeah.
And it's
that's enough to know that.
What can be known at moment of the beginning of awareness? What can be known?
What happens?
Yes, but what can be known? Panya. Can it appear like it is in the very beginning? Or not enough, not strong enough to appear? But right understanding is there to know that it's awareness. So you know what awareness is when awareness arises. Even that very weak panya, very slight panya, but it's panya which knows the difference between moment with awareness and moment without awareness. So now everyone knows by oneself whether there is awareness or no awareness of what reality.
So when you don't know, you cannot know. That is what a friend asked.
You can know there's no awareness.
Or you can take something as awareness instead of awareness with wrong understanding.
But that is a difficult point for people.
Can you know there's no awareness? That would imply awareness to me.
Might imply moment. Awareness, yes.
Okay.
could you comment on John's question? If one knows there's no awareness at the present moment,
by thinking,
could be by thinking,
mm-hmm. not by understanding the moment, which is a reality which cannot understand reality right then. So in the beginning, when awareness arises, it's the moment of understanding that awareness is different from moment without awareness, which has gone.
Can you say that again, please?
When awareness arises, Panya knows that there is, or awareness is aware of a reality, different from moment before. No awareness, and then awareness. Different.
You're wanting a description again, just like I did.
So the characteristic of awareness is that which is aware of a characteristic. See, because if we do not think about names at all, whatever appears is real. Each one is different Dhamma. Whisper object is a kind of Dhamma, sound is Dhamma, hearing is Dhamma, thinking is Dhamma, no name at all. So awareness is aware of a characteristic, no matter is sound, hardness, because usually in a day, the body consciousness experiences hardness without any understanding, no mindfulness of the characteristic which is hard as a reality. But when awareness arises, it's the hardness is exactly the same, but not only body consciousness which experiences it as usual, because awareness arises and it is aware of hardness like usual. No difference at all.
Can we say awareness is like the difference between being very far away from a picture and you can't see any details, and then when you get up close, you can see the fine details?
I think that reality is presenting themselves now, but ignorance cannot understand them as realities. Until there is more and more understanding about the absolute reality which appears as reality, no name. Like whisper object, we don't have to call whisper object or whatever we used to think about the name. It's here, it appears, and awareness does not move away from whisper object right now. Even in a moment, it's there to begin to see whisper object with right understanding as just a reality. So it takes time to become detached from the story about whisper object and for thinking about name and theory about whisper object. And the proof is that when Panya develops, it becomes detached from clinging even just a moment for whisper object right then. It passes on to other object instantly, as natural as it used to be. Otherwise, there can be the moment of clinging with some thinking or wishing or trying to understand that. So one knows that when Panya develops, it can understand instantly and become detached instantly. No more thinking about clinging or wanting that object anymore.
Why does it not cling?
Whisper object as just whisper object. Because it's so short and other reality follows and Panya can follow.
So no need to cling. It knows no need to cling.
When there's no attachment, it follows the preceding, the following object. Panya does not cling.
It can't cling.
No, it knows, so it does not cling. If it does not know, then it clings. Yeah.
Because when Banya arises, there will be no attachment. Right. There may be right afterwards.
Can I just ask one very quick question, and then I know Kunsuchin has to take her medicine. A comment that a sutta that many people often quote to us because we say this is the right way, this is the teachings of the Buddha, there's only one way. And then
according to their understanding.
According to their understanding. And then they often quote suttas like the Pasura Sutta and Samyutta Nikaya about only here there is purity, that's what they say, no other doctrines are pure, so they say, insisting on that what they depend on is good, they're deeply entrenched in their personal truths, etc., etc. Of course, we know this is referring to those with wrong view, claiming this is purity. But do you have any comment?
Can they know that now nobody, there are only Dhamma appearing?
This is the truth. This is the answer. Yes.
If they keep on reciting this whole sutta,
yes.
Does it mean that the person understands reality at this moment?
That's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.